Hello, welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm J.D. Sutter, producer and co-host of the Audio Theater Central Podcast, where we explore family-friendly audio drama through in-depth interviews with cast and crew, through news and reviews. Each month, there's a brand new episode. You can visit us at audiotheatercentral.com. Now on with the show, here is Robert and Matthew. Or should I say, Matthew and Robert. Well, I'll let you guys fight it out. Here you go.
Hello and welcome once again to the Audio Drama Production Podcast, a very festive episode because of the time of year, and quite a special episode this week, Matthew.
It is, yeah. Have we ever recorded an audio drama production podcast episode in such plush and professional surroundings?
I.e. not a car and not in your front garden next to lawnmowers and stuff. Yeah.
So we've got a special guest on the episode with us today, Colin Gray of thepodcasthost.com. Colin is the owner of this facility and also my boss. How are you doing, Colin?
Very well, thanks. Very well. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Just in case the listener hasn't heard of you before, Colin, do you want to tell us a wee bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I founded The Podcast Host about 5 years ago, basically on the premise that I was enjoying podcasting. I'd worked in education for a little while, taught people how to podcast at a university in Edinburgh, and just enjoyed doing it. So I thought I'd set up the website just to start to teach my experience, share everything I was learning, talk about gadgets and stuff, because I'm a bit of a geek and I enjoy doing that. And that basically evolved into the business that we have today, which is helping people to create podcasts and putting podcasts out there into the world. So yeah, these days produce podcasts for folk and produce some of our own as well, which you're working on some good ones yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. And I was going to ask you who your favourite employee is, but we'll leave that until the end.
Well, we've got a couple of people work for us in the Philippines. They're both pretty good.
Yeah, I heard that. So Colin's joining us for this episode because we wanted to have a wee conversation about we're going in a new year, and you know, are we going to all remain amateurs in the world of audio drama forever? I know some people aren't by definition amateurs. Some people have business models and they're making money, but certainly from myself and Robert, and I know many of you listening are the same, that we do this as a passion. We create these shows, we give them away for free. And whilst we love to do it, when it comes to paying the rent, when it comes to buying food, unfortunately, none of these vendors understand the whole doing it for the love. You know, they still want money. So are we going to get to a stage in audio drama where it is going to be fairly easy for us to make money? And that's the big question today. Certainly, I don't have an answer for this. And I'm hoping that, Colin, you know, you're coming at this from, you know, a kind of business podcast angle. I know you've been involved in a lot of business shows, you know your way around the sort of business models in podcasts. And so I'm interested to get some of your thoughts. Robert, just to open up, there's been debates in audio drama over the past year or so, or probably longer, about people, you know, some people say you should charge for your shows, period. Some people say, no, you shouldn't charge for your shows. Have you ever been swayed one way or another to this? Do you think there's a right and a wrong answer here?
Yes. I would say just simply making good stuff and then charging from day one won't convince anybody to buy it. They need to know who you are and what you're capable of doing, you know. I would say I was quite surprised by the Kickstarters that have done really well over the past couple of years, and not just even with audio dramas, but in the, like, for instance, in the field of gaming. Are you aware of Elite?
Yeah, we discussed this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
Yeah, the audio drama Kickstarter. Well, actually, the creator of that game, David Braben, did a Kickstarter over the course of like a year or two to make an up-to-date version of the game that was online, Elite 4. And he raised, I can't remember the exact amount, but it was a huge amount. Yeah. And that's because people remember the game. They know David Braben's a man to be reckoned with, and they had great faith in him. And I think that's got a lot to do with faith, you know. Casey Wayland, he raised a fair whack for an extension of the We're Alive franchise. And it's because he gave away such a huge amount of great content that people are willing to get behind him. So I think that will be key in getting any kind of money out of this.
Colin, as building a reputation, the way to earn money online, creating content in this day and age, can you come out the gate and just charge for stuff? Does that work?
I think there aren't many podcasters out there who have started charging straight away. In fact, I can't think of any, to be honest. The model seems to be, you've got to build your audience first, don't you? You've got to have these people that love the stuff you're doing. You build up that trust, that credibility with them. You show them that you put out great quality stuff. And then you tell them, right, the next good quality stuff we're going to put out, we can only do it with a bit of help because, you know, this takes a bit of time. Let's be honest, I've got to put some bread on the table. I can put out some more good quality stuff and put it more regularly. I can get out there and I can meet more people if I have some funds to do this. And I think that's how the Kickstarters work, don't they? I've seen a few good Kickstarters for podcasting recently, which were based around that. They were just an honest plea to say, I love doing this in my spare time, but actually I could create such a better show if I had a bit of money to go and travel and meet people in person. I had a bit of money to spend on that accommodation, all that kind of thing. I had the money to spend on more kit. I had the more time to do it, more time to spend on the editing. So yeah, I think you've got to build that credibility first and then charge people for it.
And that's why celebrities can charge for their podcasts, isn't it? Like Ricky Gervais, we all know who he is. Some of us at least think he's funny. And he was able to go and charge £1 a time for a podcast. And he got 7 or 8 million downloads. So, you know, do the maths.
I don't think he charged. Did he charge straight away as well? I have a feeling he put out some free episodes at the start.
A lot of them were free to begin with. And then it was like the extended, the bigger content, if you like.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, I've loved it so much. Ooh, I might just pay for it. And suddenly he's doubled his net worth.
Indeed. Yeah, no, I think it's pretty fascinating, actually, because it's a big problem that podcasters are having at the moment as well, and figuring out how to make money out of this. And it's getting it's getting more common, I suppose, at the moment, because there's more money coming into podcasting. I'm not sure if that's the same with audio drama. I mean, do people take it seriously as a business at the moment? Are there businesses out there that make money out of audio drama?
A few. There's a few elite, if you like, companies that are on the books at the BBC, you know, and they're known to the people that commission it, and they make very specific dramas. But
I would also say that the you know, good examples are indie people, if you like, that have set up really good business models. You've got the Wireless Theatre down in London. You've got Jonathan Mitchell with The Truth over in the States, and you know, they're doing really well. It's, you know, it is possible. People are doing it, but it's very few. And I just wonder, you know, at what point, because, you know, we do a lot of business podcasts at work, Colin, and I've heard quite a lot about how you test a product. You find out if there's a demand that people are willing to pay for. And I'm just curious, at what point do you know an audio drama? At what point do you know people would pay for it? Because you might be getting 1,000 downloads within a couple of weeks of releasing something, but realistically, how many of those people would have bought it? And I'm not quite sure if there's a way to figure that out.
Well, the Kickstarter, obviously that's the beauty of Kickstarter, and that people have to pay up front. So you've got a pretty good guarantee that, well, it's not even a guarantee. People have paid for it. But outside of that, it depends on the engagement you got with your audience. So it depends how much you're talking to them. So how much, say you are getting 2,000 downloads an episode, how many of them actually feedback to you? How many get in touch on Twitter, on email? That's kind of an indicator of the level of engagement. It's not just people that download and listen to the first 10 minutes and then, you know, tail off. So I think it's down to measuring how heavily engaged they are with you. And you can get that through that feedback, through social media, through if you actually ask them to take part in something, to take an action, like to leave a comment on your blog or something like that, all of those things just give you an indicator of the number of people that really are engaging with you. So I think that could give you at least a starter percentage, say, of how many might convert. Have you ever tried asking on your own show?
We do ask for Patreon donations for this show. And our Patreon account will extend to audio dramas that we do.
Yep.
I've been surprised at the generosity of our listeners when it comes to Patreon. Mm-hmm. Doing a lot better than I expected, being a natural pessimist.
Yeah.
People are generous enough. I'm just conscious that it is still a very small community.
Yeah.
And also, the amount of people that listen to our stuff are also producers in their own right.
Mm.
We've always joked in the past that we share around the same £10 note or $10, you know, because who's entitled to the money at the end of the day when it comes to being spent out with the circle that's been passed around? Because fair enough, we might be making a show 1 month. Somebody could give us money towards that. But what happens then when they make a show 6 months down the line and are asking for money? We'll probably throw some their way. So we need to find a way of reaching the extended audience. Now, I think it's been a good year for audio drama with that. We've obviously had Lock and Key, which was released on Audible to a great reception just before we hit record on this episode. There's an article there that I've shared in the Facebook community on Forbes magazine. So there's a best-selling author who's just announced that she's creating an audio drama. It says audio drama. I'm not sure how accurate that is, because sometimes you hear something being an audio drama, it's maybe not. But you know, we'll not split hairs here. There is an ever expanding audience here. I also think that as podcasting gets bigger, which it obviously is, speech podcasting, the entry barriers getting smaller. There's technology out there now, like Auphonic and things like Levelator, and that people are able to record and create audio, and it sounds pretty good and it meets loudness standards and things like that. So this is all getting easier. At the same time, will your more refined or experienced podcast listener, will they start to want higher quality, higher produced stuff? And is that where audio drama could come in and provide for them there?
I think if you've got the choice between something that's been made by a beginner in the field, and then you listen to something that's obviously been made by somebody who's been at it for a good few years, you're going to be able to tell the difference, aren't you? So they'll choose to go after the high-end stuff, I should hope. Does that mean they'll pay for the good stuff rather than listen to the okay stuff for free? I'm not sure.
So is all the thinking about selling the dramas themselves rather than other ways of monetizing?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point, because it's not the only way, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, there are things like advertising.
Yeah.
Robert, we are working with Steve Schneider to develop a fantasy series, you know, a kind of Skyrim-esque, Games of Thrones-esque fantasy series.
Mm-hmm.
To have a, you know, a Fruit Pastels advert at the start of it, would it ruin it? You know, if we got offered a great sponsorship, would we take it?
How great. You know,
enough to eat meat.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And farmyard meat. No. I'd be interested, let's say. You know, I'd look at the different ways of doing it. I think, again, We're Alive, they had sponsors at the beginning. And because it got the advert out of the way at the beginning and you understood why it was happening, you accept it. And you know that once you get through that 45 seconds, you've then got 20-odd minutes of uninterrupted content and you're immersed in a story. Whereas I've heard other podcasts, you know, Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson? He'll have 4 minutes at a time, and then suddenly, and time to talk about paracetamol, because if you've got a headache, you won't keep going. And it's like, no, I was really interested in what you were talking about. It was time, space, the cosmos, and now you're shilling.
But also you're really enjoying that because he's been able to make it because he's got that sponsorship.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not defending it. I'm just saying, you know,
it's necessary.
What point are we, you know, what's acceptable? What's going to upset your listeners?
Well, that's the reason that advertising is doing really well in podcasting just now, is because it's been treated as an internal element, I suppose, of the episodes rather than, you know, these separate. So like you say, you could have a 30-second thing at the start, then a 30-second in the middle, and a 30-second at the end, just like a TV program, I guess. And we're used to that. And where you also used to kind of turn it off on those as well, those kind of promos. Whereas somebody like Marc Maron, for example, who's got a huge audience and he reads his ads exactly the same way. He's like talking and just suddenly say, blah, 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 blah. Oh yeah, by the way, stamps.com, go and get someone from them. And it's integrated in, but because it is, that means people don't skip over it. They don't tune out. It's said
in still his, listening to him.
It's said in his voice. It's from the host that they're really engaged in at that time. And that's why podcasting actually gets a better rate per 1,000 listeners, say, than your average, than a radio, certainly, than TV, than newspapers right now. It's just the power, the conversions are so much higher because it's coming directly from the host.
And I suppose it's quicker as well. You're not having to wait for 5 minutes worth of adverts.
So that obviously works for speech podcasting. Again, going into Valenhai, could our characters suddenly break out in an advert? Having said that, I was listening to the Black Tapes last night, and they've integrated some sort of postal service advert.
Is that stamps.com? They're on everything now.
She said, working on the Black Tapes is scary, but what's also scary is going to the post office.
And I mean, fair enough,
you know, it's quite clever.
Yeah.
It works. Probably wouldn't work in a lot of shows, or would it? You know, we're creative people.
I think the big problem that a lot of people, like, no offense, but yourselves, creatives, people that make great stuff, you don't want to sell because you don't want to ruin the integrity of the show. But like you've said already, you can only make these things if you get money to sustain it. So you're doing your audience a disservice if you run yourselves out of business, to say that word, but like treat it as a business. You run yourself out of business by not making enough money to sustain it, not having the time to sustain it, that kind of thing. You can only give this great stuff to your audience if you earn enough to make it worth it.
And yeah, and it's funny, maybe it's because it's audio drama and we don't want to ruin the story. Whereas something I mention quite a lot is I'm in a small covers band. If they wanted me to read adverts out halftime, I'd be more than willing to do that. I'd wear a t-shirt with the brand on it and nothing below the waist in order to make a few extra bucks. So there's my integrity.
I suppose, like, you know, say we could make money. See, if you run a podcast, if you run a speech podcast, even this podcast, it can bring in money, and, you know, there's not a lot of issues. There's two of us. An audio drama involves, you know, it could potentially be 20 actors if it's a huge show.
Mm-hmm.
They could have very small lines, but they're still contributing. They're still offering the talents that they've worked and honed and trained for. Composers, you could be paying for sound effects and things like that. When you're involving all these people, what's the ethics of making money? Because say we were to get a sponsorship for say we got £400 per episode, what would be the ethical way to carve that up? Bearing in mind, Robert and Steve are spending hours a night writing. You know, I'll be spending hours and hours producing. But like I've mentioned, the people that we need to execute this story have spent years developing their talents, and we need them as well. So I'm wondering how you get around that. Yeah. You know, by the end of it, and you've made £20, you were as well probably making nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few ways that works. You always have to treat it like a business. So you have to actually have agreements up front. You have your contracts, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's obvious enough. But the way you split it up, there's two ways that I've found with the courses that we do with the podcast host, for example. So we get people in to help us create courses, and we get people to write blog posts for us, all that kind of stuff. So there's a few different paybacks for them, I guess. The first of which is that I just pay them. You'd pay them for their time up front. You say, right, are you willing to do 20 minutes worth of voice acting for £100? And actually, I wonder if quite a lot of your voice actors would be delighted to get anything. So they'd be quite willing to do it for what is not a great hourly rate. But then that belongs to you and you don't have to worry about anything beyond that. Actually, it just goes to yourselves as the creators, producers, writers, promoters of the whole show. And that's always the simplest way. Obviously, you don't kind of bring anyone else into the business. But then sometimes they're not, you either don't have the money up front to pay for that, or they're not willing to do it for a low enough price, I suppose, that you can afford it, in which case you have to share it up. And then it's just giving shares in the business. So it's, you've got a business whereby you're the writer, Robert, so you get 30%, you're the producer, Matthew, so you get 30%, and then you've got 40% left to split up between 10 actors, say, who are doing a much smaller amount of the work, but they're still, like you say, they're vital to it. So And then obviously you just have to treat it as in you're going to be doing your accounts every month and working out the profit and the costs and all that kind of stuff so that you can split it up beyond that. And it becomes complicated, but I suppose that might attract higher levels of people in because they stand to make more, depending on how big it gets, I guess. So you get more negotiating power the more successful you get. But yeah, there's certainly two different ways to do it.
I'd certainly be willing because, you know, we're not going to make enough money to retire anytime soon off of this in the first couple of episodes of Val and I, for instance. So I'd be willing to take less of a cut in order to ensure that we got a better grade of actor or producer, or not producer, sorry, but...
I agree with you.
music producer, I meant to say, like a composer or whatever, and to ensure that even if it meant giving people more of a cut so they can buy a better microphone because they're the actor we want, but maybe their microphone isn't the best, I'd be willing to take a smaller fee in order to make a better product, especially at this stage when we're really just starting out in our careers as audio drama producers, aren't we?
We'll talk about that in a second, you know, because I like the idea of the greater good, you know, eventually growing it to a stage. But we have in the past had discussions and interviews on the show where producers have had some quite creative ideas, you know, getting around this, paying the talent, and like Zorro Stage Studios and Our Fair City do this really well. And I've heard of them actually offering an actor a little drop money or that they're going to send them out this microphone because it's a microphone they want them to use.
Payment in part,
keep the mic, basically.
Payment in kind, so, I should say.
You know, it's got the double benefit. You're paying someone, but, you know, it's good that you're giving them that mic because you know that they're going to use a good mic.
Benefiting you too.
Yeah, so, you know, there are ways to pay your people that aren't just, like, involving money.
It's funny how people value those things more than money as well. Like, you buy somebody a 30 quid mic and they'll value that so much more than the £30 for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe I could, for Christmas, give Caitlin an extra thick duvet to put over her head for when she's recording lines.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's a great duvet as well. It means better lines and, you know.
All sorts of benefits there. Yeah.
So is it maybe a task for producers, for audio drama creators to even just mock up a budget, you know, sit down and think, like, what would this show need to be profitable? How much money would it need? You know, how much could I attribute to pay actors? And then how much on top of that could I take a wee cut myself and then just have that fee ready? Say it's £500 and they know that if a sponsor can come in with that money that they'll accept it. If they come in below that, fair enough, they might consider it. But is that something you would publicise on your show, on your website, you know, that they're available for sponsor? Is that something we've seen done before?
I've never seen it. I think it's more likely that, like for us, we would maybe approach a sound effects company or something, or a hardware company. Like, we'd considered that back in the day, didn't we? About approaching them and saying, look, we're producing a podcast about audio drama production. The people that are listening are likely to buy your products. That would be the sort of avenue we'd go down, as opposed to approaching Coca-Cola, for instance.
But that's for an audio drama production podcast, but for a drama, how then? Because we have people that listen, like you say, that buy sound effects, that buy, you know, soundproof panels. What does someone who listens to a fantasy show buy that a sponsor would want to get in front of?
You need to ask them. Surveys.
Yeah.
Have you talked to your listeners much? Like, I know both you've got the two different areas, but do you have an idea of the demographics and the kind of problems they're having, the issues they face, all that kind of stuff, just general life?
It's a mixed bag, I think. You know, we've got one good thing about the community. There's so many variations, you know, backgrounds and genders and everything like that. No two people are alike.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, no, I don't know. It'd be interesting to do that. But then,
I mean, there's ones like did you mention it earlier on already? Audible, for example. So Audible, you did the Lock and Key show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they kind of, a lot of podcasts got sponsored by Audible in the early days because there's a natural jump from listening to podcasts to listening to audiobooks. And maybe that's even more relevant for you guys now because they do audio dramas. So
yeah,
might be that they'd be willing to do to sponsor a few external shows, even though they're sort of buying in their own. I'm sure they'd, because that would benefit them by bringing people in. So, but it's, I know what you mean, like for a general, an audio drama, which it's harder, much harder to nail down your demographic than, say, a mountain biking podcast where you get people that make mountain biking kit. So that obviously applies, but yeah, it's much more difficult.
Funnily enough, the We're Alive adverts were really eclectic.
Really?
Like one week it would be something to do with pets, and then it was the fish tank company. And they were, I think they were all based in locally in LA, but it was weird how it was one thing one week and one thing the next, and really diverse, like other podcasts were advertising and stuff.
Was that set in LA then? Is that why it was locally set? Right, okay.
And the thing is, I bet that, you know, I bet it was just basically friends and family that paid for those ads, but now, you know, they started in 2009. We're Alive, I think, is somewhere between 40 and 50 million total downloads now. So I'm not saying these businesses would have made like millions from these, but certainly probably done them no harm because they've been heard by a lot. Even, you know, most places, it doesn't matter. I'm never going to shop in LA, but I suppose that you can maybe point to that. You know, these adverts are here forever. These sponsorships are always going to be here.
So the one thing that quite a few podcasters are doing now that is on the rise certainly is actually pre-planning a full series of podcasts based around a particular topic and actually pre-selling it as well. It's almost kind of like a Kickstarter, but for sponsors, really. For example, there's a friend of mine who's creating a business podcast aimed at a particular, I think it's business systems he's talking around, and he's found a sponsor which is really targeted at that topic. So actually, rather than sponsoring an entire show, he's gone out and sold this idea for a series to that sponsor, got money up front to fund the creation of it as well, and then that advert's going to be really heavily integrated into the show in a nice, in a good way, like not in a totally overpowering way, but it gives them the chance to build it in rather than just have like a random thing thrown every now and again. Like, it just occurred to me, could you have product placement in an audio drama?
Yeah, it could be done. Could be done, probably.
So like in the aftermath, you've got there's plenty of car scenes. You go, right, okay, we're going to go and jump in the Lexus, drive over to...
Yeah, all these cars have failed after a year of saying, oh, but this one turned on first time ever.
So just to change track a wee bit, you know, Colin, you've been in podcasting since about 2007 when the medium was very young. I know that you're listening to an increasing number of audio dramas nowadays.
Definitely.
Looking in, you know, because if you're coming across these shows, and I know podcasts are all free on iTunes and things like that, but when you see anyone, have you encountered any audio dramas charging money? And Does their pricing, does that make you draw any conclusions in your head, rightly or wrongly?
I only really started listening to audio dramas once I got to know you, obviously, and you kind of introduced me to them. Certainly the free ones anyway, the online ones. But before that, I had actually come across, so giving away slightly of my geeky side here, I'd come across quite a lot of the Warhammer audio dramas from the Black Library a while back, like 5-6 years ago. And I listened to a fair few of them, and they were something like £10 to £15 for an hour or so, of drama. Pretty heavily produced and everything. Like, I mean, it's proper, like massive soundscapes and atmosphere and sound effects and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, nothing much more than what you guys are doing already. But they're charging, I mean, that's a pretty hefty amount of money for quite a short amount of time.
That's
for content.
Huge, yeah.
But that didn't put me off, because when I listened to it, it was like, well, I mean, you pay that same price for a film, and I'll pay that happily enough for a DVD or whatever. And it didn't seem out, I mean, it was shorter, but it didn't seem out with the sort of same scope, at least. So there's precedence there for paying £10 for an hour to 2 hours worth of entertainment, I think. So I don't, a lot of it's about this sort of the mindset about, because people always underprice themselves. That's the problem we always have with people who come to us and say, we're starting up a podcast, we want to promote our business, here are all our struggles. And it always gets into a little bit business development stuff. And it always turns out that they're cheap as anything. Like, they always seem to be far cheaper than they should be. Nobody ever prices themselves right in the early days. And maybe this is a sort of new area and nobody's willing to be the first to start charging. But there is definitely a perception that if it's free, it's crap. Whereas if you charge for something, you put much more value on it. So the first few people that start charging for their audio dramas, I wouldn't be surprised if they do quite well, just because people will go, oh, these must be professionals. So I'm enjoying this free stuff. I wonder what the expensive stuff is like. And as long as you live up to it in terms of the quality you put out, I suppose you stand a good chance of doing well.
I would agree with that, because we interviewed Wireless Theatre and they charge. And even after just speaking to them and learning about their practices, the studio environments and the fact they've done live performances, and immediately you're thinking, well, they're charging because they deserve to. I want to give them money. I want to listen to their stuff, and I'm willing to pay £1 or £2 per audio drama, or even the £25 for the yearly pass, that sort of thing. And yeah, it's absolutely true. I think if we can get Valenhyde to be where we want it to be, and I think we've got a very good chance, and then if we did decide to go down that route, I think we'd be pleasantly surprised.
There's a big gratitude thing, actually. Like, people will, like you say, they'll actually ask you to pay for something. I've seen that in many examples in podcasts that get a really loyal audience. People go out of their way to use that podcaster's affiliate link, for example, because it's one of the only ways they make money out of it. So they'll get in touch and go, hey, do you have an affiliate? I'm about to buy Lead Pages or something. Did you have an affiliate link for it? I'd like you to get the money for it. So there's a big thing around, if you put out great quality stuff, so like you guys, who've put out tons of free episodes, that as soon as you do put out something that's paid, even if somebody doesn't really want to listen to that, they'll pay money for it just to say thank you for the previous stuff that's come before.
£15 an hour. You heard it here first. Here we go.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can create your own sponsors, can't you? Yeah, like, we could, you know, Aftermath, we could pick, well, did you read the Alex Scarrow books? Really good.
Last Light and so on.
Post-apocalyptic, peak oil style stories. We could, in theory, have got an affiliate through Amazon and just mentioned at the start of Aftermath, like, if you like the show, check out this book, click through. And so there's the option to create your own sponsors if you want in this day and age. Loaded question for you then, Robert. So charging for audio drama, would you rather have £20 and 20 listeners or no pounds and 200 listeners?
I would rather have loads of listeners, because £20 wouldn't change my life. If it was £1 million and one listener, then yeah, bring in the Sheikh of Abdul Habari or whatever, and he's willing to pay me £1 million. And
I've heard Donald Trump likes our stuff.
Well, I've still got some integrity. Hang on.
So, say, just thinking out loud here, you know, people who have just started an audio drama and they're learning the technology and they're learning how to write. When I think back to when we were in that stage, I wasn't really interested in making money because I was just so wrapped up in learning how to do this. Now in audio drama, we're seeing people who've been doing it for 5 to 10 years. There's a core of people who are in that stage now where they're really good at it, but they're still technically amateurs. We're all in our own wee bubbles. We're all independents. Is there potential for almost like a record label to oversee a group of producers who want to move from that amateur to the professional field? Is that something that could work, like an organisation almost, that can help, you know, almost like an overall business model? Or would that, you know, would the politics of that destroy it? Is it, that's obviously something that could happen.
Both.
Yeah.
No, there's great potential and there's also the great danger as well, yeah. Like, you take a group of musicians, for instance, that they're brilliant at singing, playing the guitar and so on, but do they know how to mix it all together to put out on a CD? And that's when you get somebody else in to make that happen. They do the magic with their own individual instrument and whatever, but you need somebody that's able to put it together, to market it, and there's a lot involved, you know? How often do you hear a band, a song on the radio, whatever, and it's great, and you hear them live and you think, yeah, it's not what I heard on the CD. You know, it's okay, but it's much more rough. You know, that's what struck me about hearing live music for the first time, is it's much more rough than you're used to on a record. So I think there's a huge potential for people that have been doing it at an amateur level for years to move forward in such a way, but
almost under a banner, like because Colin, like in business, we've done a few shows on this ourselves and with other people recently, and we've always this has always came up where if you're good at something and you enjoy doing it, that doesn't necessarily mean that you should be in business doing it, because when you're in business, how often are you actually doing what you like doing, and how often are you managing the business? Yeah. So would a lot of people in audio drama not just jump at the chance to work for someone who is willing to sit back, pay them for it, but obviously they would be taking a cut and reaping some of the rewards as well? Is that an ideal setup maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's the old patronage. It's where the Patreon concept came from, isn't it? That in the olden days, you'd get a patron for an artist, so they'd just get to go out there and practice their art and all that kind of stuff, and they'd pay them a fee, and the patron would get to make money or even just fame and prestige out of having this person at their house. So, and Robert, you said as well about the lack of marketing and sales knowledge. I mean, that's the thing that most people suffer for, isn't it? You get great technicians, can create an amazing audio drama, but you've no idea how to promote it, make it popular, to market it. So, yeah, I think that would, if you have a company that can see a way to make enough money out of audio dramas to make it worthwhile, they are paying somebody to create them, then makes a lot of sense that they would, that they could do that.
I know that we've got Audioflix, who were on the show. Domeen interviewed Tim from Audioflix. So they're a company who are setting up, you know, they're a business, they're going to be charging for audio dramas. A very mixed response in our community when that came up. You know, a lot of people saying, all right, so they sit back and take the money. I could see both arguments. You know, I was thinking it's a good idea. I could see the points of people thinking that they're going to be sitting back and taking money. But then I would also argue it's not just as easy as that. Running a business, there's loads of things you have to do. And, you know, I would rather somebody else did it and be able to work on my art than sitting doing tax returns. There's loads more. I mean, you'll know yourself, Colin, running this business.
People always want it all. They're always, I'd love to get paid for this. And then as soon as they do, they're like, oh, this person's profiting out of my skill and my work. But yeah, there's also the whole power in numbers, I guess. Strength in numbers is what I'm trying to say. So if you had an agency or a label, as you call it, which had, say, 10, 15 audio dramas under its wings and could nurture them, and there could be a lot of cross-promotion, and actually there, because you've got that many together, that's a place where people go to buy those dramas, and therefore somebody who finds one likes that one, they're more likely to buy the other ones. Whereas if you're all separate, you're all spread around the internet, you're not really helping each other, because you're not really in competition here, are you? Until it gets to thousands of audio dramas. If somebody likes one audio drama, you're not producing so much that you can rule the airwaves. People are going to buy it and go, that's brilliant. Where can I find some more of this?
Yeah. And they'll listen to both.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, right now I would be quite happy to pay that 10, 15, 20 quid I was mentioning earlier on to buy more of them, because right now I've run out of the ones I like. So I need more. So demand, you guys need supply. To go out and make more. Yeah.
So I, as someone who's, like you say, recently discovered audio drama, if I wasn't telling you shows that you should check out, how would you go online and find new audio dramas? What would you do?
Well, I've searched the same way I do for podcasts. So I've gone on my my podcatcher and typed in audio drama. I found a few that way, but I struggled a little bit. There wasn't that many that listed themselves as audio dramas, which is a problem they have for a start. But just, Google search as well, I've done. But I'm not sure whether I'm not doing it right. I imagine I am. I've pretty practiced at searching these days.
So it's mixed results, basically.
Yeah, I'm not finding a whole lot, to be honest. And I'm finding definitely a bit of variable quality out there too.
So if again, like, just, you know, you from a listening perspective, if a site came up, like a directory with a subscription, and there was a barrier to entry, basically, where a certain quality was assured.
Yes, exactly.
Then you could just say, well, yeah, there's my subscription, and I know that I'm going to be getting quality. Because as far as I know, that is what Audioflix has planned. Again, like I say, a mixed response, and I've not looked into it enough yet. I'm a bit of a sheep. I'd probably wait and see what everyone else did. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but
No, that sounds good to me. I would happily pay £10 a month or whatever to be able to, that seems like a bargain to me if there's lots of dramas on there that I could listen to. And it would take up a, because at the moment I'm listening to them on a way into work because I don't want to listen to my normal podcast because they just get my head buzzing and I get to work and I don't stick to the work I'm supposed to do because I've got all these ideas. So instead I'm listening to dramas on the way in because it entertains me in the car, it gets me to work. So if I had something that I could listen to every morning for half an hour, well, there's just not enough out there though that fills that time right now. So yeah, if I thought that I was paying £10 a month, even more than that, to be honest, that could finance more of this good stuff to come out, then I'd happily do it.
I think that's improving in terms of the term audio drama, which hasn't always been as universally accepted as it is now. I think this past year has been really good for that coming forward. People like Audible using the term audio drama. There's the rise of things like the Black Tapes podcast and Serial, and they seem to be coined as docudrama.
Yeah.
Which is fine. If we can label them and we know what we're talking about, then that's great. Rather than just like an audio story or movie for your minds and all the other variations we've heard, audio drama seems to really be starting to stick and it's coming to the fore all the time, and that can only be good for us.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know whether it's worth talking a bit about a couple of the different ways that podcasts make money. Because there's that's only really the first way that podcasting makes money, by selling the show itself. In fact, it's probably the least common. We talked about sponsorship, obviously, so that's a big one too. But the other, one of the most common ways that podcasts make money is through upgrades, I guess, content upgrades. So you have your free stuff that goes out there. That's kind of the lead generator. People find you through that. You don't charge for that because that's how people get to know you, trust you, ensure the quality of what you do. But then you either do more audio, which obviously is a lot more work, or you actually just do stuff that goes along with it. So I guess the most obvious example from drama or entertainment is merch, merchandise, so t-shirts and things like that. So, I mean, I guess you could do that quite obviously. But the thing that's popping into my head, it might go nowhere, but like one of the best, one of the most profitable podcasts in Scotland, for example, local to us, is a network called Radio Lingua. So they teach Spanish. They teach all languages, actually, but they started out with Coffee Break Spanish and Coffee Break French. And the way they make money is that they give away their podcast for free. So every week there's a new lesson for Spanish, but actually you pay £1 every episode to get a sheet that goes along with it. So a revision sheet or something like that. I mean, nothing's popping into my head right now, but you guys know it better. Are there things that you could upgrade episodes with that people would like to hear about? Like a fictionalized interview for 20 minutes with one of your characters or something like that. Like, people get to know these people. Could you make little extras that don't take as much time as a full episode that could go along with it that people would pay extra for?
Interesting. Yeah. I don't see why not.
Even a more extreme version of this, and for all I know, people have probably done this already, but if you have a series, if you have 12 episodes out there for free, you could create a 6 to 8 hour long prequel to your story and put it on Audible as an audio book, even though it's an audio drama. So you could be selling that on Audible. People listen to your free content and think, well, you know, I really enjoyed that. I would love to have 8 more hours of this. So that's loads of work. But at the same time, you know, you'd probably be creating it and putting it away for free anyway. So it's certainly an option.
I mean, there's even your script. You must have a script, like a screenplay, I suppose. People buy them and read them. £1 for that episode's screenplay. Even though it's the same content, it's surprising how people get into things, how people become so loyal that they'll pay for... That could be the thank you. So maybe they don't even read it, but they love the show, so they like to own this. They just have it on their Kindle and they can glance at it every now and again. And it goes along the lines of people who collate blog posts. So people who have a really popular blog, they'll put together 10 to 15 of their best articles along a certain theme and put it onto Amazon. And even though that stuff's available for free on the blog itself, people will pay for it either as a thank you or because it's just an easier way of consuming that material.
Interesting thoughts. Yeah, I like the idea of the scripts being available.
Yeah.
Because I love reading scripts, especially of films that I've enjoyed years before. And I've gone back and done it again recently just to get an idea of how it looks before it becomes how I know it now, you know? Like, I read the Pulp Fiction screenplay when I was a teenager, and I was blown away by how easy it was to read, and it was like I was following the story, and I loved it. And that was a book that sold for a tenner.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why not?
Again, I think it comes back to the fact at the moment, anyway, that, like I said before, a lot of the audience, a lot of our audience that listens to our audio dramas are also producing their own stuff and vice versa. And we need to be getting in front of bigger audiences. We need to be getting out of that space. We need to be going places and being found places that we're not being found at the moment. Most people, well, a lot of people still haven't heard the podcast, and they certainly haven't heard of audio drama. Radio drama has all sorts of negative, outdated connotations when you mention it to people. And I just think until we're able to expand that audience, there's only going to be a small, finite amount of money. Fair enough, we might be able to sell a few things here and there. We're going to give it back to other producers when they go and sell something. So maybe that's, you know, going into this new year, maybe that's the priority, is for everyone independently just to be getting out there, not just sharing their own shows, sharing everyone's shows. It's great that Audible have put Lock and Key out, because I think that got in front of a lot of people, and these people are going to be looking for more like that. So I suppose marketing, do we have to become marketers now? Are we marketers by default? Are we content
always.
Marketers?
You're always marketers.
So, yeah,
because you're creating stuff. If you want people to consume your material, you're a marketer of that material.
Yeah, but I think that's a huge point, is getting out from within just the people who make the stuff that also like to listen to the stuff. There has to be people who like to listen to the stuff that aren't making it. I mean, you know, that's the same for every other medium. Not every comic fan actually writes comics and draws comics.
Yeah. So I'm sure you'll shoot me down entirely, but am I right in thinking that Archers is an audio drama?
Yeah, it's a radio drama. It's not my cup of tea, but it's you can't argue with its consistency and its popularity.
And sure, that must get, I presume that must get millions of listeners, because it's been going for so long. They would only keep it going if it gets.
Yeah, it'll do well.
Yeah. So people do like the stuff. It's just, that's easy to consume, I suppose. That's really, really easy to consume, because it's just on the radio at a certain time. People know to expect it. And that's the trouble I think we have with podcasting as well. Like, one of our missions in the podcast host this coming year is to raise the profile of podcasting, which is exactly what you're talking about with audio drama. And the tech is helping us, so that it's easier and easier every single month to download and listen to this stuff. The apps are getting better. So we're getting over that. So it's just about getting out in the media, isn't it? It's about, and I think your idea of a label or an organization of some sort would help with that, because again, you've got the strength in numbers thing. You can get to the media, you can get to the radio, you can get to TV, whatever, if you've got a collection of 10, 15 shows which have a bit of legitimacy around them, as opposed to a sort of segregated collection of people doing it everywhere else. So
yeah, loads of interesting points there. What really are some of the most actionable things? Or again, would that just lead us to repeating everything we've just said?
Yeah, to recap everything.
for someone listening who has been making audio drama for a few years and they feel they're really good at it and they are ready to start trying to push it and maybe form a business model, what are some of the more immediate things then that you guys could think of that they could start putting in place from next year? Is it attitude? Is it about, you know, moving? Is it acceptance that, you know, a lot of people say they don't want to make money, and it almost frustrates me. I'm like, look, you're putting out really good stuff. You need, and I'm as bad for it as well.
Yeah.
You know, changing the mindset almost and accepting that I'm going to actively try and make money from this.
For me, there's two things they could do. So if you're at a stage where you're not confident that you have the quality of stuff out there yet, you don't have the volume of stuff out there yet that has you a really loyal audience, then get to know the people that you do have as an audience. So get a survey out there, start talking to people, find out what type of people they are, what type of things they like, what type of products they like, what of interests they like, what problems they have that you might be able to help them solve in some way. Because this will lead you to either sponsors that you could use, or it could lead you to something that you can create a drama around that might appeal even more strongly to them. So that's kind of for the early stages, I guess. If though you're at the stage, like yourselves, you two guys, you've got two series out there and a bunch of singular episodes as well. So you've got an audience that listens to this. You've got a volume of work behind you. Then just take part of it offline and start charging for it. Experiment. Even if you do it for 3 months and nobody buys it, you've at least tried it.
What about putting out another survey at some point and covering all the points we've discussed today and ask everybody that's listening now, thinking of yourself purely as a fan of the audio drama that you like, whether it is We're Alive or that other one I always name or Aftermath or whatever, what would you be willing to pay for additional content, like additional episodes, merchandise, Patreon, scripts? What would you be willing to pay, and how much, or would you be willing to pay this amount or that amount and get a real feel? So that might be a good indicator. We might be surprised that this person would be willing to buy a t-shirt and a mug from this franchise, that franchise, and that franchise because they love them so much. And there'll be a few skinflints, I'm sure. They'll be like, no, I'm always listening for free. If this didn't exist, I'd just put the TV on and watch any old rubbish and whatever, or listen to commercial radio.
I think that we need to see more. I mean, we're fine because we do this podcast. We have a chance to talk to people. Most of them probably are listeners. Some probably don't listen to our stuff, but they enjoy the podcast. Some maybe listen just to throw things at the speakers. But, you know, how many people putting audio drama out there are also able to engage with our listeners? Because you put an audio drama out there, it's not the sort of thing you can read out emails on and interact with people in a public way. So the audio dramatists need to also maybe have like a monthly podcast where they can talk to their listeners about what they've been up to. Getting an email list, you can get an email list free with like MailChimp and just be putting out a monthly email. I know the Hadron Gospel Hour, they do a great email list. They do a newsletter on that, so they're able to communicate with our listeners. So is it that? I mean, an audio drama is a finished product. You put it out there, people consume it, it's done. There's no interaction at all. So is it interaction, Colin? You talked about asking your audience and that. You also need to have an audience that feels that they could speak to you and have somewhere for them to go.
So. Yeah, that's a bit, sorry, I forgot about. So yeah, I'm assuming that you've got some kind of contact with your audience there, but you're absolutely right. A lot of people maybe that are putting out dramas, it doesn't fit well into the drama episode to ask for feedback at the end or to ask them to sign up for although I think at the end of every episode, you should be asking people to sign up for an email list so you can get in touch with them. But I mean, you could quite easily intersperse your drama series with little chat episodes, could you? 10, 20 minutes where you're talking about updates on the company, progress with the show. Even get feedback on, like, get people more involved by saying, what do you want? Like, have a vote. These are the five options we've got for the next plot point in the story. Which one do you want?
That's a big can of worms if we start talking about that. But, you know.
But engage them, I mean, yeah. So yeah. You want to make sure that's something in there. Because, yeah, the only way you're going to grow your audience is by engaging the ones you already have, turning them into fanatical fans and making sure they keep coming back, listening again, 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 and then passing it on to their pals.
Valenheim Convention.
I know that Rich Matheson, our pal over in California, he does the Skyrim show, Keeg's Quest, and he did a lot of episodes. He called them Campfire Storytime, and it was just him talking.
Sure.
And I loved those as much as I loved the episodes because he's just a great guy. I loved hearing what he was up to, hearing his excuses for not having a new show out, because we could all relate to that because we're all got the same excuses. I know Christoph at Leviathan was doing stuff like that as well. So I think that's maybe something we need to see more of, is just, you know, communication with your listeners outside of the community of audio drama producers. You know, we're all in contact with each other, but it's reaching those listeners that maybe just aren't confident enough to be in these communities talking to everyone because they think, well, they're all producers, you know, I'm just a listener. And obviously that's not true, you know, but make it easy for people to speak to you and give yourself platforms to put out content other than just the dramas that you're creating.
And just don't forget to to don't forget to remember. That was a pretty obvious thing to say. Remember that you can only put this stuff out if you can make it sustainable. So we said that near the start, I think. Don't be afraid to get people to pay for your stuff. It's not ruining your art by taking money for it, around it, in it, whatever, because it's the only way you can keep putting out even more stuff to serve your listeners, serve your fans.
Yeah, the day you turn up to buy your messages, your food shopping, and you're able to buy all the food and that for the love, and it's fine to be doing this stuff for free. Until that day, you're really going to have to be figuring out a way to bring some money in eventually. So,
yeah.
Well, I've ran long, but I've really enjoyed the discussion. We are we're approaching the end of the day on the end of the year. Colin, we're going for a pint. Robert's going to work. Unlucky.
I might come for a couple of pints and a whiskey before I get in the car.
It's the Scottish way.
Yeah. We might fit in one more episode before the end of the year, do you think? Or
possibly, yeah.
You wrapping up the microphone?
Let's not promise anything. Yeah. I was planning on putting in some serious Fallout 4 time, to be honest, but we'll see.
Happy days.
Your whole podcasting every week, things fall into bits, hasn't it, Matt?
I know.
Not even trying anymore.
It used to be a badge of honour. Colin, where can the listener find you on the internet?
You can find me a few places. The main bit is thepodcasthost.com. So that's the website that has all our articles on podcasting. And if you're an audio drama producer, creator out there, I'd encourage you to, like Matthew said earlier on, start your own show to really talk about the stuff you're doing and all that. So yeah, we've got loads of articles on there that teach you how to podcast for free. And I'm also on Twitter at thepodcasthost if you want to hit me up and say hello.
Yeah, I must stress, it's much, much better to learn how to podcast from Colin than to follow the example of this podcast. I'm not sure how great an example this show is. Robert, in case we don't do any more episodes until next year, what do you want to tell the listener before we wrap up? You must have a warm, gushing, encouraging message for them.
Just that I'm more encouraged than ever after the 5 years of doing this, that audio drama is on the way up and it will continue to rise, and we'll all be part of it together, and we'll see in the new dawn.
Got a tear in my eye.
Yeah.
I just want to say a big thanks to the listener, because, you know, you've been listening to this show. You could have just started listening to the show this episode, but we've always been overwhelmed at the support we've had for doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. We've learned loads from doing it. Sounds like we're never doing another one.
It sounds like you're dying. It does.
It's the end of the year. It's all that reflection time.
End of the year speech, yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited for next year. I think there's marvellous opportunities on the horizon. We've not figured it out yet. None of us have. But what an exciting time. It's the Wild West. We could do what we want. And at some point, one of us is going to do something that works, and then the rest of us could all copy it, and we'll all be rich.
That's it.
So, all the best for the new year. I hope you have a fantastic festive period. Don't drink too much. Don't eat too many mince pies. And
don't fall out with your relatives.
Yeah. Don't talk about politics over the Christmas dinner or anything like that. It's a bad move. Talk about audio drama. Introduce some family members to some new shows.
Yeah, I guess that's it. And visit us on Patreon.
Yeah.
After all we've talked about today, we've got an affiliate link as well for this, that, and the other. Go and check it out. Audiodramaproduction.com is the website. You can email us, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com, if you've been affected, good or bad, by any of the issues we've discussed today. And we welcome your feedback and your general correspondence.
Yep, I think we should end before we actually run this show into 2016. So yeah. All the best, and thanks very much.
Cheerio.